my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green, he leads me by quiet peace. Yeah, though I walk through dark valleys, you are near me, protection and guidance are comforting me everywhere that I go.
Welcome to the Pro-Life Team podcast. I'm Jacob, and I'm here with Delaney. And today we're going to get to hear Delaney's story. So Delaney, would you give us some background on yourself and how you got brought into this pro-life movement?
Sure. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me on the show today, Jacob. So I honestly didn't see myself going into the pro-life work. I didn't have it on a list. Honestly, I don't really have those 5, 10, 15 year lists that people talk about. I should, because I love strategic planning so much for organizations, but for myself, I didn't necessarily have that. I've always had these ideas where I'm like, oh man, it'd be cool to take the journalism class. It'd be cool to be a journalist one day. And then I am a journalist. And then I'm like, it'd be great to work at a nonprofit one day. And then I'm working at a nonprofit. And really, I feel like that over and over again has just showed me, I know one of your questions mentioned this, like God's fingerprints in my life. So I can go back a little bit more and actually tell you how I got there.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, tell us some of the stories where God led you into this direction, or how did that play out?
Well, I grew up an Army brat. My dad was a chaplain in the Army for 34 years. I got the opportunity to move every 1 to 3 years, lived in quite a few states, was overseas a bit as well. And it gave me an appreciation for stories, hearing where people came from, what they've been doing and everything. And kind of exploring different strengths I have based on where I was at that time, like what school, the friends I was surrounded with. And so I think just that also shaped me in a huge way. And it was in my third high school that I found myself looking at a journalism class. And I was just like, oh man, it'd be so cool to be a journalist one day. I didn't have anything really to base on other than I liked stories. I enjoyed writing. And there was just something there, which was probably Holy Spirit. And then when I was in school, I found out I could graduate early with my psychology degree, but I didn't quite feel like that was it. So I was looking at my options and I saw communications with an emphasis in journalism. And I was like, well, let me add that one. Did that. And it's funny because that was like my second major, just kind of to figure out what exactly I wanted to do. I wasn't sure if I immediately wanted to go into work that would involve the psych degree. And when I got out of college, my first job ended up being at a small town newspaper as their general newsbeat reporter. And it was during that time that I got to work with a bunch of the organizations in town as the nonprofit reporter. And I met Tracy Shellhouse, was the executive director of a New Hope Pregnancy Care Center at that time. And so our story started there, and I should probably take a breath at this point.
Oh, no, that's good. Yeah, I guess some good follow-up questions. So tell us, so fast forward to today, what role do you currently serve or fill at Extend?
I am the manager of Extend. So Extend Web Services is a solution of Heartbeat International. And so I get the honor, the privilege of leading a fantastic group of people who are really excited about reaching and rescuing lives.
Awesome. And then how does your passion for telling stories, like that journalistic passion, how does that help when it comes to this kind of, have you seen that play into this marketing space? And then the same question for psychology, how does your psychology background help when it comes to like word choice or figuring out, you know, how to communicate a message?
Sure. The funny thing about the passion for journalism is I don't know if you've worked at a small town newspaper before, especially a daily one. And that just really means you write a lot of articles. And so it was like during the 2.5 years, I think I wrote anywhere from 1100 to 1200 articles, which was a lot.
Yeah.
I was a creative writer. And so that was more of just like some of them were creative, but a lot of them were just reporting on what happened. And by the end of it, I was like, dear God, get me out of this. I'm so tired. And at that point, I was wanting to really pour into something where like every day I could be a part of a mission larger than myself. And so what I took from it at that point, like I had a little bit of burnout when it came to writing. I still could write, but I had burnout there. But it gave me this idea that I could just ask whatever question I wanted because I've been doing it for 2.5 years. And I did it before. I don't know if it's a middle child trait or what, but it just kind of fine honed. Okay. If you're wanting to find out specific things, you need to be strategic about what questions you're asking. And so more than just that passion for writing, I stepped away with just this assurance that I could ask a question and find a really good story from that.
Interesting.
And you asked a second. Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Keep going.
No, Jacob, I was going to say you asked a second question, and I know I've lost it in giving you that first answer.
Yeah. So psychology and journalism, it both seems like they can play into marketing work. Like the journalism can help someone when it comes to, maybe asking these questions of pregnancy clinic directors and helping them build out stories, or the psychology side might be coming up with the right word choice in order to have someone hear what you're trying to drive someone to the right direction based on questions.
I have wondered about my psychology degree. I just remember when I was in high school, I was trying to figure out what exactly I wanted to do. And I, kind of woke up and was like, oh yeah, I want to study psychology. And I genuinely, Jacob, to this point, to this day, don't know if the psych degree was just getting me on the right course, going to Lee University, getting me plugged in so that I could have the setup for the communications degree and stuff. I don't know if it was a matter of just having a broader empathy for people, learning more about, psychology and how people's brains work and why they do the things they do. I probably could have taken the material that they gave me during that time and used it the way you're describing. I think it would be a brilliant use of it. I don't think it has, I don't know if I've necessarily looked at it through the lens that you gave so much as it kind of broadened my perspective on how humans work, why they do the things they do, which I guess maybe points back more to that, the question part of my, or the curiosity part of my brain.
And there was, I used to go to this conference with Sister Paula Vandegeer, and she passed away a few years ago, but for a long time, she had this annual conference called an Advanced Training Institute. Mm-hmm. And one of her repeat speakers was Dr. Gregory Lester. And he was like a psychologist who would essentially he would give these talks about how people, how you can essentially work through personality disorders through questions, and sort of like he would help us navigate questions that would cover a wide swath of these personality disorders in order to get the desired outcome when it comes to having a pregnancy clinic client that had personality disorders. And I felt like what he was explaining would work even outside of the personality disorders space.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to having like two positives and a negative, in order for someone to better be prepared to accept a negative comment. And so if you give someone, and he wouldn't just say two positives, he would say, a positive when it comes to like this one style, a different positive style, and then you bring the hard truth. And then now they're more likely to accept it if you do it in that fashion, more so than just starting with just the hard truth, because they're more likely to reject it. And so it was just sort of interesting how psychology would help someone communicate messaging, which is really what marketing is all about, is helping someone get a higher degree of, accepting the message that we're trying to deliver.
Oh, yeah. Especially now with so many different ways that people can communicate, and how just everybody, as long as they have a phone, some kind of platform, they're empowered to put their voice out there. And so you're cutting through a lot of noise these days. So marketing's got to be more strategic than ever.
Yeah. And there's a lot of tools, a lot of competition, and sometimes it gets a little bit overwhelming or just exhausting. like what you experience as the reporter doing 1,100 articles or more than that. Sometimes, doing the same kind of analysis can be very, tiring. Even
really
though it's helpful, like it's really good. It's a good work, but it's hard work, and it doesn't have the, So let me go to a new question. So when you're starting to feel burnout, where do you find your green pastures or your still waters? Like, where do you find, in Psalm 23, it talks about the green pastures and still waters and how they restore, how the good shepherd is restoring our soul through making us lie down in green pastures, bringing us to still waters. So where do you find restoration, which is a ultimately it's a, you know, not even have burnout. Like, where do you find green pastures in your life or still water?
I think I'm still trying to figure out what does it look like to live without experiencing that burnout. I have found, at least to myself, and I don't think this is uncommon, that the more I keep on my shoulders and the more I try to do out of my own strength, I'm going to hit that burnout faster. Or, I mean, I'm using the word burnout, and I know that there's like legit burnout where you just can't do anything else. You've hit decision fatigue. You've lost the joy for the mission and you don't really want to talk to anybody. You just kind of want to eat, you know, cheese balls and stare at the TV. but there's also just the burnout of like, you are feeling that kind of like that, burning around the edges. You are still doing the good work. You still know why you're doing it, but you are tired and you're not getting the, you're not doing what you need to do to make sure that you're, you know, firing on all pistons. So that different levels, I don't know if you have different words for that, because I'm just going to continue calling all of it burnout, Jacob, unless you stop me now.
I would call it, burnout is probably a result, but I think it's anxiety or stress. I think those were probably the, and there's probably different levels of those.
Definitely pre-burnout, I guess, is what I'd be talking about, where you're experiencing that stress and anxiety. And that's really, if I am keeping my eyes on the Lord, I wish I had something like really great to say, but when I was working at New Hope Pregnancy Care Center as their director of advancement, it was the first time in my life that I've been placed in a position where the goals that we had felt so much larger than me. The mission that we had felt larger than what I felt like I could accomplish. And honestly, I came to New Hope without the skills that you would necessarily need for a position like that. Like most, I think a lot of pregnancy help organization team members and volunteers are in a similar spot, but I had been a journalist. I'd had the communications. I mean, I had the communications degree, but I didn't have any experience in fundraising. I didn't have a wealth of experience when it came to advertising and donor relations. That's a lot of stuff that I learned underneath Tracy's tutelage and then just doing the job every day. And so in that position, I was looking at these huge fundraising goals, and the fundraising goals just kept getting bigger and bigger. And my first Walk for Life was a failure. It was rough. I don't think my second one was that much better. I was there for 5 years, and it put me in that spot where I, for the first time in my life, and I was still relatively young then, I just realized, oh man, this is bigger than me. And when I had my eyes on the Lord and I was actually taking time to rest in Him, even though that seemed counterproductive sometimes when you've got so much going on. And I kept remembering that, like, yeah, in my role, I'm supposed to accomplish this goal. On paper, this is what I'm supposed to do. But really, who's going before me? Who's got my back? Who's standing beside me? Who am I doing this with? And it's God. That made all the difference. And so every time, like when I'm starting to feel burnout and stuff, it's because I am taking it on myself. Long answer to say I'm taking on myself. And if I point myself back to the Lord, or very kind, wonderful, challenging people in my life point me back to the Lord, then I am in a much better place. Is that similar for you, Jacob?
Somewhat. Yeah. I sometimes get anxiety and stress from just like every time I wake up in the morning, I've got about 40 plus emails, and throughout the day, there's 40 more rolling in. And it's just like, how am I ever going to keep up? If I take off time, I will just be buried. And so I get some anxiety from that, or stress, or burnout, or pre-burnout.
Yeah.
So what I have been doing a lot lately is my wife and I, we've been picking up some hobbies, you know, athletic hobbies. So
pickleball. Sorry.
Yeah. We play pickleball 3 times a week. Probably adding up to like 7 hours, maybe even 8. Sometimes it's so much fun.
It is.
And when I first started playing pickleball, I would get anxiety because I was, you know, playing a new sport, playing against people that were better. And so for some reason, when I would serve, I would sometimes just like think about Psalms 23, and that would help me like, you know, make it through playing, which seems a little, I don't do that anymore because I don't have that anxiety when I'm playing anymore, but it was actually a really good experience, was to do something that was athletic outside of my comfort zone. And then Psalm 23 was like what I would chew on when trying to, you know, relieve stress. But I also wasn't thinking about work. It was stress from playing the game.
Yeah.
And then my wife and I, we also are playing sand volleyball on Monday night. And I've had the similar experience there. And now, as of the last 6 weeks, we're working on a half marathon that's coming up in middle December. And so
look at the bars.
12 miles. But we have been walking 7.5 several times as prep. So we'll see how that goes. Man, but I feel
impressed.
Like these kind of things have been helpful. And when walking, I've been able to get some podcast time in. I've been able to get some music, or just thinking about some of these projects and thinking about my word choice for some of these projects. Mm-hmm. That's been really helpful, because when I'm sitting at my desk, my email is constantly engaging me to the point where I don't really have the ability to do deep thought. But when I'm walking and there's really nothing else around me except mountains and the ability to just think, that's really helpful.
So, Jacob, I've got so many responses to things you just said. Can I just like hit you with
them? Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
First, I feel very seen when you talked about the emails. I was just thinking about this yesterday again. I was like, okay, what do I need to do to set up my day so that I get these emails taken care of? Because there's some important things I don't want to miss, but I also have like all of these other things I want to do. So thank you for mentioning the emails. Two, this is not something you have to share on the podcast, but I'm very curious where you're at, that you have a sand volleyball court and mountains. That sounds lovely.
Yeah, so we're in Tucson, Arizona, and there's a public park. It's called Udall. It's a public park about 10, 15 minutes from our house. And we play pickleball outdoor. We play pickleball indoor there. And we also, there's two sand courts. And we play on Monday nights with a league where they balance the teams out. So we don't all have to come with our pre-built team. We just come as singles or duos and mix in. And it reshuffles every 3 months. And my wife and I, we're the second and third oldest people out there.
Yeah.
There's one lady, Debbie, who's 71, but we're the next oldest people.
Debbie.
But most people are, Debbie. Go Debbie. But most people are in their 20s or 30s. But it's a lot of fun. They put on some music. We play games. We all take turns bringing food. There's a whole schedule to it, and it's really fun.
That is so fun. The last time I played volleyball, I went with a friend. It had been years since I played in high school, and I took a spike right to the face. And, you know, I left that court embarrassed and in pain, and I haven't returned, but maybe now's the time to find a group like yours.
Yeah, it's a pickup league. And my wife, she took she's much shorter than I am. And she took a ball, I think, to the neck. And
she kept going.
I don't know. At first, the adrenaline of playing, it didn't bother her. But when we stopped playing, like she started crying because it overwhelmed her with all the, you know, like, wow, this really hurt.
I bet. Yeah. I mean, I heard once there was this joke, someone said that pain takes a backseat to embarrassment. And maybe that's what happened in that moment. Embarrassment took the floor when it happened to me, because, you know, like when, like in movies, when everybody goes, oh, that's what happened. Like they had like 10 or more different voices saying that. And it's like, no, everybody just saw that happen. And then the final thing is, I'm just really impressed that you guys are doing a half marathon, because I just set up a list of things I want to do. And let me tell you what, Jacob, it wasn't a half marathon. I said, oh, by March, I will do a 5K. Like it wasn't, that's 3 miles and you've got what? 13? You've got 13 miles for your half marathon? 13,
I think it's 13.1 or 12.1. I can't remember which, but
I think it's 13.
It's one of the two.
Because it's 26.2 for a marathon, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's 13.1. Yeah. So my wife, on Thursdays from 10 to noon, we also play volleyball, which is volleyball on a racquetball court. And we're one of the youngest people in that group.
Yeah.
And so with volleyball, one of the ladies we've been playing with, her name's Tammy, she was going to run this half marathon. And meanwhile, my wife and I were going to marriage counseling with our pastor, and my pastor was telling me it's been a Jacob-centric world for quite some time. We need to let that pendulum swing back to let it be a Heather-centric world.
Sure.
And so part of having a Heather-centric world, and I noticed she likes running, because she would do it on the treadmill in years past, but she would, you know, she hasn't done much outdoor running. And so I was telling Tammy, you know, Heather probably would like to run with you. And then I knew Heather would agree because she actually does like running, but she would do it resistantly. And so she ended up, I only had to ask her once and she signed up with Tammy. And then, and Heather says that she got tricked into doing it, but really I'm the one that got tricked into doing it because I ended up joining them too. And I'm
Not
that likes to run. So
no, I like it. And I also like that it's so, what you said was so, what is the word? Practical. Like, I agree. And so going back to the question you asked, I do need to keep my eyes on Jesus because that's what like ultimately helps. But really what you said, things that bring you joy, that's, that also helps me. Like I love writing letters and I love laughing and I love having a good conversation with people. So I think it's brilliant because I mean, all anybody has to do is look at everything you output to know that you do a lot of work. And so the fact that you've built in space to have those moments where it's like away from work, that is awesome. And you're right. That's probably a killer way to keep burnout away, even though it seems like counterproductive at times.
Yeah. And sometimes when, you know, when the work piles up, we have to, we focus on it, but it, we have to balance it out with downtime and restoration.
Yeah.
Cause like, I do a lot of thinking on Psalms 23. So, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And then it goes into the how he, you know, makes us so we don't need to want by covering us, making us lie down in green pastures, leading us to still waters. And then it says, it restores my soul. And then it says, he leads us along righteous pathways for his name's sake alone. And then it goes into like these dark spaces, like because he might lead us into hard places. I think about that as being like the work that we're involved in the pro-life space, where we're having to go into these, you know, the valley of death, but we don't fear evil because he's with us, and we have his rod and staff for comfort. And there's a, and that might mean the Bible, that might mean just his protection and guidance, which is the Bible in some ways, and. But I look at that restoration of the green pastures and the still waters as balancing it so that we can go into the dark, scary valley of death, in, which is really to, you know, because he's guiding us somewhere based on something that he's calling us to do for his namesake. And so I feel like there's that balance that's, you know, we're invited to have. So we're not just always called to be on that hard, scary road.
Yeah.
We have to have our soul gets restored first in Psalms 23, and then we take that hard path. And then if we end up staying, the next verse comes about he prepares a table before us in the presence of our enemies. And that just seems like such a wild verse to think about how God's preparing a table for us in the presence of our enemies. And I look at that as also reflecting my experience in the pro-life space a great deal. And then our cup overflows, we get anointed with oil, which is very intimate sounding. And then and goodness and mercy shall follow us all the days of our life. But I look at that table story, like I just love thinking about those words. And I feel like Psalms 23 is a way of defeating anxiety. Like I feel like it's built to help us understand the full picture of, like it's a whole story. It's a lot there.
One of the things I try to remember when I'm in a spot where it feels like maybe I'm in front of my enemies, or it feels like the people I'm talking to are my enemies, or just the odds are overwhelming, is going back to my time as the director of advancement at New Hope. I kept seeing God show up time and again. And so sometimes it felt like I was in a bomb shelter, you know, like where you're just like getting slammed and you're like, oh, another one hit. But it was really cool during that same time, got the opportunity to see God go before us again and again. And it's not that you don't have some defeats and stuff. And it's not that you don't have things that hurt your heart. Like you said, sometimes it can be very dark. But the fact that like, I don't think I would have seen nearly as many miracles many times like God coming through if I wasn't in that space. Like if I was just in a space where, you know, I was way more comfortable, or there just wasn't as big of obstacles, like you're not going to have your David and Goliath moments if there's no Goliaths in front of you.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And Yeah, and pulling, well, and, yeah, and David wrote Psalms 23.
So it's like, hey, he pulled it back together.
Yeah, and he actually, yeah, he was prepped out there in the, well, watching sheep to learn how to, you know, fighting off bears and lions, or fighting, you know, fighting and killing some large animals. But yeah, I sometimes feel like, you know, God can't have a victory unless there's something to have victory over, or you can't have a comeback unless you have a deficit, or you can't, you know, overcome unless there's something to overcome. And so I feel like if it was just all easy, it wouldn't be much of a story. It would just be like, it would be sort of just like a coast. It would just be coasting, and that wouldn't be much, that wouldn't be worth celebrating for, perhaps.
Whoa. You've put entirely too good of a spin on the times that I need to struggle, Jacob. Next time I'm complaining to the Lord, I'll be like, wait, no, wait, Jacob said something really good about this.
Yeah. My pastor tells me I'm, what's the word? I'm, you know, I spin everything positive.
Yeah. I do like, though, speaking of victories, I think sometimes I forget this is, sometimes it just seems like victory is so far off, and just remembering that, like, God's got the ultimate victory. Like, he's got it in his hands. When I was working for Tracy, she has this story, where somebody told her, you know, you're not as important as you think you are, but he didn't mean that in a bad way. He meant, like, you know, this is God's ministry. He's got this. So whether you're here or somebody else is here, like, it is his work. And that has been nice too, because sometimes, like you said, sometimes you're just climbing that mountain and it is a struggle. And then just to remember that, like, he does have the ultimate victory. Like, it's already there. It's just, you've got these stories in between now and then.
Yeah. And I feel like our responsibility is to follow his leading and then let him do the work, because, like, in that one verse, it says, he leads us down righteous pathways. We have to follow, but that's about it. And then he's doing it for his name's sake, and so we don't have to worry about the results or the credit, because it's for his name's sake. So it's, and usually it just means we get to observe what he's doing. I think that's part of what the experience is like.
I've got a question for you, Jacob. I probably have a lot, but one of them is, especially with everything you've been doing, and when you do have those victories, do you actually take the time to celebrate? And if so, what does that look like? Because I think celebration is a key part of keeping burnout at bay.
Yeah, I would say I fall short on celebration, but I do. I would agree that celebration is good, especially when we have a victory, like when Roe was overturned. Like, that it was this huge victory. And it just felt like celebrating. Sometimes I felt like when I was trying to celebrate, I would get hit with like a wet blanket by people who didn't understand or didn't agree with my viewpoint. And it was just, it made it almost like, do I celebrate, or do I just soften my voice? And I would just say, I got hit with the wet blanket, and it was sort of like, I mean, because I didn't think that would ever happen in my lifetime. I knew God would overturn Roe. I just thought it would be something that my kids would see and I would already be gone. But for it to happen in my lifetime was so much quicker than I expected it to happen.
I do remember. So sorry.
No, yeah, go ahead.
I do remember there were a lot of, like, mixed responses, like, even in the pro-life world, like, a lot of mixed responses to the overturning of Roe v. Wade. I also, I think something else that happened during that was, like, overturned. There's like, yay. And then it's like, this is what we need to do next. And I feel like that's something we do in almost, I mean, I say we,
every
it's a blanket
time.
Statement, but like, anytime there's like a victory, whether you got your monthly, the money you wanted to get in for your organization that month, or you, like, had a great event, or you reached another abortion minded woman, or you, somebody accepted Christ. I feel like sometimes you have those moments and there's a little bit of a celebration, but then you're like, and what are we going to do next? This is what we should do next time. And that's, that part's really important. That's how you grow and improve. But my sister-in-law called me out one time. She was like, I don't think you're good at celebrating. And she was right. And I still am not great at it, but it's something I'm trying to be better about, because I think that's a really important piece.
Yeah. And it sort of aligns with this podcast, where when I try and ask people about their stories or where God is you know, where you've someone seen God's fingerprint, so we can capture that story and let people hear it or amplify that voice. But like in general practice, I would say I'm also poor at celebrating, because I put the semicolon in versus the period and say, and now what do we do? But it's not like we take, you know, a couple hours just to breathe and relax and enjoy the victory. We're thinking, okay, now what's next? Or how do we continue?
Or even if there was a set way, like, cause I understand that sometimes it doesn't feel like you have a couple hours. I mean, maybe it's I don't know, something that does demand like you do something else next. But I wonder if, and this is probably me making it way too, I don't know, put in a box or something, but I wonder if there's like a set way. Like my sister-in-law, her way of celebrating that time of her life was she went out to a nice, like got a nice meal. And that just doesn't hit me the same. I don't always enjoy going out to eat, but I do enjoy like having like experiences or like, sharing the news or something and celebrating with somebody. So even if you just had a set way, and I was like, as we're talking in my head, I'm like, what does that look like at iRapture? Like if you guys had a win, what would a celebration look like for your team? Whether it's just between two people or if it's like a really big win, it's across the company.
Yeah. It probably would look like a phone call and just simply, you know, expressing how we're excited about how something played out. Well, that's usually how it plays. Or it might be us, you know, commenting on Slack with happy emojis.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, at Extend, we would like just flood Discord with like one GIF after another of celebrations.
Yeah. Yeah. My family, we take vacations like once a year, usually with my parents helping with the funding, or we go on a trip with my parents, and that's been really great. But for my wife and I, we sort of treat like our physical activity like a weekly vacation where we're trying to restore. And I literally think about it like as if it's like a miniature vacation every week, getting that that exercise, getting to not think about work, in order to be able to be more present at work when I come back. But I think that's sort of like when something really good happens, sometimes I feel like just, you know, being able to break away and get some physical activity is a way that I feel like I'm enjoying some time off or enjoying some time. But yeah.
Nice.
How do you celebrate with your team besides Discord? Do you have some good phone calls or ever have it? Is everyone remote? I don't even know.
Everybody's remote.
Everyone's remote. Okay.
It's great because we have these fantastic people on the team and they do not live in, you know, Columbus, Ohio, which is where they would need to live if we were in person. And I wouldn't be on the team if we didn't have remote, but there is something to be said about having everybody in person. That's something I like, as we're talking about celebrating and stuff, I am really thankful for this conversation because it's bringing back to mind. I'm like, okay, well, I know the importance of celebration. I have been pretty like focused on getting this thing done, then the next thing done. And I was like, but what does it look like to bring that in? Like we do laugh and we share gifts and stuff. But what does it look like to really celebrate with my team in a way that kind of just adds a little, not, I don't mean this in a bad way, but adds like a little sparkle to their day. I was going to say magic, but adds a little sparkle to their day, you know?
Yeah. That's a good thing to consider, especially as someone who can help orchestrate or plan that out. That sounds desirable. One of my colleagues who, Sandy, who helps manage our team, is helping us organize a Christmas party because most of our team is in Tucson. Okay. We have a few people that are outside of Tucson, but most of us are in Tucson, like 80%. And so we're putting together a Christmas party at her house, and we're going to have a ugly sweater contest. We're going to be making some short videos with Carlene, one of our team members, is going to have us, she's orchestrating us to do some video work over there. And we're going to have to change out of our ugly sweaters into some normal wear. We're doing potluck. We're having a cookie exchange. And I think that's, And I'm looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. Some holiday celebration time. So that might be a good way to, it's holiday driven more so than, you know, maybe like a win driven. But I guess we made it to the end of the year, which I think is a win.
Hey, we did it. We do.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that you mentioned the holiday pottery, I do have this thing. I call it the quarterly shenanigans, and I just pop it on everybody's calendar. And for an hour, on some random Friday every quarter, we'll play Jack and Vox games, or
okay,
we will play Among Us, which is that game where it's like somebody's going yeah. around just like taking out other players, or we will, this next one, I'll probably have them do the you know, like where you do like the scavenger hunt where you're sitting at your computer and it's like, go find something blue, and they have to like race their house to like get it. And then whoever like wins that, I'll get a gift card. And I also, this is probably counts as more like torture than team bonding, but I sometimes will ask my team members like the weirdest questions. I inherited this position, you know, Lauren was the manager before me, and she had on the agenda, like, I asked a silly question and I was like, okay, I don't want to rock the boat too much, so let me continue doing that. And it turned out my silly questions were just so much weirder than hers. Like one of them was just, you're walking down an alley, suddenly these three characters come out. And I think I had something, maybe it was just three bad guys. And I was like, using a fictional character, how are you getting out of this situation? Or you have to get away from bad guys, jumping into your favorite movie. While you're in there, what are you doing? Are you part of the story? Are you like, anyway, so they did, and they would just look at me with horror on their face, Jacob, when I would ask these questions. And I was like, oh, this is a little weirder than the one she would ask you, huh?
Oh, that's good. And my son, he likes this game called Fun Employment. And yeah. You essentially have two decks. One is like a deck of traits. And there is a deck of jobs. And so like one person's the person hiring. And so there's a card, like let's say it's chef. Mm-hmm. And then everyone has their three traits. You have five cards. You pick out three traits. And you have to try and apply for the job using these traits in your hand. Like you pull out two or three.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, the person that's applying for the chef, one person's going to say, you know, I'm able to... I can't even, let me try and think, you know, I can turn everything into dairy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my superpowers and I'm also a pirate. And so obviously I'm going to be a really good chef. I can work in, you know, confined quarters. And then the person hiring, we pull off a random card off the trait. We said, well, when I was looking at your social media, I see that you also have a unicorn. Can you tell me more about that? And so like, that's
smart. Yeah. I like that. I haven't heard of that one before. Fun Employment.
It's a small card game. And it's for like my son and my youngest daughter really like that game.
So you're telling me they might have a little bit of spin in them as well, like you, be able to spin a situation.
Yeah, they definitely like the storytelling and the humor. And then my nephew, when he plays that game, he does these amazing accents and it's really fun.
Oh yeah. I like to do accents too, but I don't think anyone would ever describe them as amazing. I will say, you know, as we're talking, one of the things I just want to, and I don't want to interrupt any question you have next, Jacob, but one of the things that's just really cool is I don't think I realized that one of the focuses of your podcast was seeing God's fingerprints. Like I'd seen it, like I knew you gave me like the prep questions and stuff, and I had watched some of the other episodes, but I don't think it just didn't click. And that's on me, not on you. I just hadn't noticed that, but I've been thinking a lot about it. And you asked me at the beginning of this podcast about how I got involved in the pro-life work. And it's been interesting being in this, like as someone who never had it on my list, just the way that I can very clearly see God's fingerprints all over my life. And not only just the fact that like I came in initially with New Hope, but during the time that I was at New Hope, I developed a love for strategic marketing and just early strategic plans. And I saw the importance of them and the effect it had on New Hope and how it helped us accomplish even more. And so after, when I felt like my time at New Hope had come to an end, I was like, okay, God, what am I going to next? And there was one thing that sounded like a lot of fun and I didn't know what it would be, but I just liked the idea of building something with an organization and then stepping away and like helping if I needed to, but not doing it at the organization itself. And I ended up working at the strategic marketing company that worked with credit unions across the country. And then I didn't know what it would come next. I still love the pro-life work. I still believed in it, but it was three and a half years or so later that I ended up working at Extend, which is a solution of Heartbeat. D- didn't see it, was not on the plan again. And I, looking back, I was like, oh, I see all the ways you were involved in this, God, getting me back here. And I'm so thankful to be here. You know, you mentioned that the pro-life work can be like sometimes a really dark and rough place, but it also is like, man, so encouraging and so obviously life-giving. And it's an absolute joy and humble to be back involved in it again in like an active way other than a supporter or donor and stuff.
Yeah, that's good. So there's a prayer retreat that's connected to a few churches in Tucson, and it's called Learn to Love the Master. And the way it's built is they will add, essentially it's like a journaling project where we spend a lot of time by ourselves journaling. And then we read to a group of people who love Jesus in order to share what we wrote. Journaling was, you know, essentially journaling, trying to hear God's voice.
Yeah. I've done that before. It's fun. It's really edifying.
And the way this one works is that the goal is to ask, what is your earliest memory? Like that's where this one starts. So, and then the follow-up question is you pray, God, where were you at that time? And then you write down what you hear, and then you try and decipher whether it's God's voice, the enemy's voice, or your own voice perhaps, but usually it's God's voice or the enemy's voice.
Sure.
But the idea is to start off with your earliest memory, because obviously at your earliest memory, you wouldn't have been aware that God was there, because it's a very early memory. But God was there, like God was present in those early memories. And so even though we don't see it, God is present. It's just a matter of us maybe asking him now, where were you when I wasn't paying attention to you?
Yeah.
So it's sort of interesting how you said, you know, you can see God's fingerprints now looking back. Because I think that's always true, is that God is present. It's just a matter of asking him today, you know, where were you when I wasn't paying attention? Or during that time.
I was the months leading up to starting at Extend, I was so befuddled. I was like, God, it's always followed the same path. Like I would be at a place and then I'd get to the point where I was like, oh, okay, it's time for a switch. And then I would get this like dream of what I wanted to do next. And then it would happen. A door would open or something, or I would step away and then like a door would open, and it just followed that same pattern. And I was like, hey, I'm tired. And I know it's time for a change, but I didn't think I had a dream of what I wanted to do. I didn't know exactly where I wanted to go. And I didn't realize I had been having conversations with Lauren and Tracy with Extend that year. It just hadn't clicked. And I had been talking to him. I was like, man, God, I would love the opportunity to be in a leadership role where I really have an opportunity to pour into people's lives, because I've seen the impact of good leadership in my life, and I've seen the impact of bad leadership on my life and other people's lives. And I also wanted to dive into, I loved helping credit unions. It's cool what they do, but also I was wanting to dive back into work like this. And I really, really wanted an opportunity to use the things that I had learned for good. And so while I was getting frustrated with him, which is embarrassing to say about, you know, God, but I was getting frustrated, it was still following the same path. And then like Extend just like popped up, and I was like, oh, you've been working on this thing this whole time. And I didn't realize it. Like as I was, you know, feeling a little sad that I didn't know what my next thing was, but I could tell that the season was needed to come to an end.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to try and reflect on finding that time to reflect on your story. As you're talking about credit unions, so we used to use Bank of America back in the day, and then they donate to Planned Parenthood, and so about I don't even know now, 8 years ago ish, we switched to a one called Evangelical Credit Union.
Nice.
And then they changed their name to Adelphi. Okay. I'm not sure exactly what Adelphi means, but
you don't know, but that they changed the name. Sorry, please keep going.
Probably a Greek word for something, but I never looked it up. And then this last month they merged with Christian CCC something, Christian Community Credit Union.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but there were two that were pro-life when I was trying to find an alternative to Bank of America a long time ago. and it was the Evangelical Christian Credit Union, ECCU, yeah. and also the Christian, the one with all the C's,
yeah.
Credit Union. And but now they've actually merged. So that was sort of, and I was almost sort of disappointed when they changed their name to Adelphi, because it didn't have the same, I was trying to have one that sounded Christian. And, it, and part of my interview question, I only asked them like one or two questions. And one was, would you ever donate to Planned Parenthood? And their answer was no. I don't know if I even had a second question before.
You're like, cool, let's go.
That was about it. They said, no, we wouldn't do it. Oh, and my follow-up question was, what if there was an employee matching program and the employee picked an abortion clinic? Would you do it in that case? And they said no. And so I was like, okay, that's
good question. Yeah.
Because I think that's how PayPal donates to Planned Parenthood, is based on an employee matching program or things like that. And I didn't want that to be the issue.
Yeah.
And yeah. Anyway, so all that to say is, and so yeah, we made that switch a long time ago to the credit union. It's less sophisticated. It takes a little bit more work because the bank had more options, more features. But I really like working with them.
Yeah.
And then we also switched from using Intuit for our credit card processing, mm-hmm. which is not a healthy company spiritually at all. Probably unhealthy, I guess, would be a better way to say it. And then now we're using Cornerstone Payment System, which is pro-life/Christian. And that's been a good move. We actually just did that one mm-hmm. this year. And I don't know why I didn't do it sooner. It's been really good to make that switch.
Well, but I mean,
trying to work with pro-life vendors.
sometimes those switches, just like the thought of going through, I don't know, like the paperwork or whatever it is. Yeah. Top of everything else you have. But I think that's great. We've got a number of customers that use Cornerstone Payments.
Yeah. I think they're the one I refer to today. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of vendors in that space, but they're the one I currently promote the most.
Jacob, there is one thing that I was really wanting to pick your brain on.
Yeah.
I am clearly doing the podcast wrong.
No, it's
fine. I'm supposed to be on here and you're supposed to be picking my brain. This is basically what I did to you at a Karenette's conference. I just pelted you with questions. Okay. So when I was looking at the questions you had, and one of them was about new marketing or tactics, and I am not opposed to those. That's something that we're, you know, looking at, and like, what do we need to have to make sure that the people that we're working with have reach and rescue as many lives as possible. But something that I've been thinking about a lot this year is just the number of pregnancy help organizations, whether maternity home or a pregnancy center. I haven't talked with any adoption agencies, but this might be a thing for them as well. But it's just, you know, they want to hit certain goals. Like they want to reach more abortion minded women, or they want to have a certain number of people coming through, but they don't know what numbers they're already seeing. So they don't know what their baseline is. And then to even compare, like, what does success look like? Do they have goals for the next year? What's the baseline that they already have? And if they are working with some kind of marketing vendor, is there, like, if they don't have that information, how are they determining, like, whether or not work's being done, or how can they tell how good of the work is being done? So, like, that's just something that's been on my mind. So, like, what has been your experience? Have you run into a lot of organizations that don't have that information?
Yes.
How important do you think that is to really reaching goals or doing as much good impact as you possibly can?
Yeah. So I'm going to make my short list so I don't forget. So one is Google Ads, and the other one is How Did You Hear About Us? And the other one will be A/B testing and measuring events. Okay. So Google Ads. So with Google Ads, if someone has like a vendor and they're paying them mm-hmm. $500 a month.
Yeah.
So I think the pregnancy clinic should have access to that account mm-hmm. and then can go to the history or the log and see how much, you know, how many entries has there been over the last 7 months. And if you see only 10, then you know that you're overpaying. You're paying, you know, you're paying $500 a month times X number of months and no work is being done.
That's smart. Yeah.
And that's a travesty. And I would just say, stop it. That's what I would say. Like, it'd be better to pay someone zero and let them do zero than to pay someone 500 and let them do zero. That would be my response. And so that's an easy one to measure. It's based on the log, like the history of what, you know, of actions done on the account. But I want to keep going because there's a few other things.
Yeah, so go.
Measuring success is, I think, really important on that. How did you hear about us data, which is often pulled from Ekairo, Waycool, or Next Level, or something else. But that, how did you hear about us, those answers? So, and then taking that data of dates, the response of how did you hear about us in relation to the status of that client, the client assessment, whether they're AV, AM, or LM, like abortion vulnerable, abortion minded, or life minded. And then disregarding the LMs and focusing on the AVs and AMs. And then comparing that data before and after a marketing event. So if you end up going to a, let's say in the month of April, you go to three health fairs or job fairs or book fairs or community fairs or county fairs. And then you measure your word of mouth number before that and after that, because word of mouth doesn't last forever and it's not completely organic. It's based on people having interactions.
Yeah.
And so by going to those county fairs, there's going to be a bump on word of mouth. And the question is what kind of bump? Or if you do, someone does, four different baby bottle bounce back campaigns at four different churches, then measuring church and word of mouth before and after the events will give an indication of how that impacted the clients coming in and having them choose. I would love to see people having the option of picking more than one. How did you hear about us? But that's currently not an option on any of the platforms, but I think that would be smart. But having one is okay, because that's what we have. But it'd be better, I think, to let people pick multiple. Because usually people have a few touch points, but they may only be picking the one that's most prominent, which still might have the most weight. And then A-B testing. This is something I'm really excited about. And it's not like it's a new term, but most parent clinic directors, if I ask them what's A-B testing, they'll say, well, I'm not sure. But once I explain it, it makes it's really obvious. So it's simply a matter of doing something versus not doing something. That could be an A-B test where you measure whether, you know, whether it was better before we did it or after we did it. That's an A-B test. Another A-B test would be like version A versus version B, where you run and, you know, let's say you put up a sign outside your building for 30 days and you put up a different sign for 60 days. And then you see which one did better per business day. And that's an A-B test. But measuring events, I think that's something I would love to see more clinics do. And I feel like it's very much a quiet, there's a lot of room for improvement in that space.
I think that's great. Because I definitely was looking at it from the perspective of going into new year, make sure you have goals, right? Make sure you know what you're going after. And then also make sure you know what you've done, like historically, what have you done? How realistic is this goal? And then what do you need to accomplish to hit this goal? And then as you're working either with people internally or with vendors externally, how are they helping you reach this goal? But I really like the perspective you have on just even the Google, like if you're paying someone $500 a month and they're not doing something, or, I mean, and you can even go look at it the other way of like, what are the conversions? Like, what who are you seeing come through your doors versus what are you hearing? But I like all the different ways. Like I also like how you've taken A-B testing, which, you know, typically or before A-B testing, you're looking at emails, you know, how do they compare? And you're like, no, I'm not just going to keep it to emails. I'm going to bring it out and we're going to look and see like, what does it look like in the real world as well with everything that you're doing or not doing?
Yeah. So there's this case study that I learned about in college. So the year was probably 1998, I guess, because when I took this class. And the case study is probably a Harvard case study because we got most of them. And I went to the University of Arizona, and it was about assembly line workers, whether they would work better under bright lights or regular lights. Mm-hmm. Which one do you think ended up working better, bright lights or regular lights?
Regular.
It is a trick question.
Regular lights.
Regular lights? Okay. So you were right. It was better under regular lights, but it was also better under bright lights. And the reason why is because someone was right behind that person counting how fast they were working. So it wasn't about the bright lights or the regular lights. It turned out people work better when they're being measured.
That is hilarious. I want to know how they got to the point where they realized it wasn't the lights. Now I'm curious about that.
That was, they literally did a case study on what, you know, which lighting would be better. And they learned that it was both. And it was only because there's someone right behind the person working, measuring. So I just want to apply that to pregnancy clinics and A/B testing. Let's compete with our best ideas. Let's compete with our colleagues and their great ideas. And it's not about the A or the B, even though that's how we process this. It's really about the testing. It's about measuring and trying to outcompete our previous best idea.
Yeah.
So testing, A/B testing, the word testing is the most important word there.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to know where you've been to see if you're actually moving forward and stuff. Can I throw another case study out there real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
So my friend, I don't remember what this book was about, but I remember there was this case study the book talked about, and they took two groups of hotel like cleaning workers, same hotel group of people. They just split them into two groups. And for one group, they had them do everything like normal. And the other, they had them, they told them, this is how many calories you burn when you vacuum. This is how many calories you burn when you change the sheets. This is how many calories you burn when you take out the trash. Like everything that they would do, they knew the calories. So one group just did everything normal. They didn't get that spill. The other group, they heard about the calories burned and nothing else was changed. Like just do normal life. It's just one group knew the calories were being burned. And when they came back to them, whether it was 6 weeks or 3 months or whatever later, they found that the group who was aware that they were burning calories were actually like they had lost weight. And it wasn't, again, because they had changed. They hadn't changed their diets. They hadn't changed, like they weren't suddenly working out 5 days a week. They just knew that they were putting out energy like when they were working and stuff and burning calories. And the whole finding of the case study was just like, you know, the brain is so powerful. Like it knows what you're doing. And kind of thinking about that from a pregnancy help organization like Lens, it's just like, I wonder what that would change, like in terms of going back to burnout and stuff, how that would change how we're operating. Like if we had like an awareness at every level of a maternity home or adoption agency or pregnancy center, like the work we're doing, how it impacts life, whether you're crunching numbers or you are actually on the front line talking to people, like, well, would that change something? Or is there another way that we could kind of twist that, just thinking like how powerful the brain is when you have a certain, when it's, you know, has a certain filter on it, how would that impact your day-to-day life and maybe keeping that anxiety and stress and stuff at bay?
Well, I think the A/B testing literally connects with what you're trying to say. Cause like essentially if we can try and compete with ourselves, compete with the other person on our team. So that way we're trying to constantly improve and polish instead of trying to put out a marketing piece that just has to coast into oblivion until it turns into a muddy mess and has to be turned off. The goal is to have it be something good and only have it run for 30 days and then run something else that's competitively as good or better. And then, and then measuring per business day, which one had a better outcome. And then trying to compete against the winner and learning from what ended up winning. So we can see, you know, word choice, color choice, and how these different elements, different, you know, size, number of words, how these pieces played into the results. Mm-hmm. And ultimately to essentially try and add someone over our shoulders, if, you know, testing our ideas so that we're trying to compete with our past idea or with our colleague's idea, so that ultimately as a group and through this A/B testing, we're doing better by adding more rounds of polish, more rounds of creativity and not letting things just coast, because coasting is the go-to, like that's what you end up with when someone's, you know, you're paying someone $500 a month for Google Ads and there wasn't any work being done and you don't even realize it because you're still getting impressions and clicks and conversions. But you also could have gotten that same result by paying someone zero by letting it coast. And so I feel like, you know, that you know, kind of have an ongoing A/B testing and convert, you know, and polish building is there not just for coast. It's essentially, it's a way of growing. And it can be applied to like, you know, someone's Google ad spend goes from $10 a day to $15 a day, there can be an A/B test on what was the outcome of that $5 increase per day. Mm-hmm. If we use, have a banner in front of someone's building that has their slogan versus maybe abortion pill reversal, you know, awareness building, an A/B test could be done on that based on the, how'd you hear about us in the signage response, in front of the office. And then the A/B testing can be done anywhere there's a way of reaching the community, like, you know, the county fair booth. You could have one version, and then the next county fair, try a different, you know, table version, and then compare the results. And the results will be, it'll be better based on the testing, because we're trying to outdo previous ideas instead of just doing the same thing repeatedly or trying to do minimal.
How would someone build this? Like, we're talking to like the average pregnancy help organization here, and they've got a lot going on. So how do you recommend they actually build A/B testing into what they're doing? Like,
so it's, so they have the data in the Kairos, WaveCool, or Next Level, that how'd you hear about us data, a date for the client that came in, the response on the how'd you hear about us list. And then there's also going to be the client assessment, if we can get that to be paired up. And so, and then it's a matter of just simply, you know, if there's a marketing event on a certain date, comparing 60 days before, 60 days after, in order to see that, to see the outcome of that event. And so I'm also doing a workshop at Heartbeat.
Oh, hey, there we go.
on data-driven analysis. And it's going to be all about this. And I'm going to have examples. And, but yeah, I share about this all the time lately, because I think, and then I feel like it's needed. And sometimes people talk about it in a high level where it doesn't really click. And so I'm trying to bring it into like
practical
words.
I was going to ask if you had like a blog or something that like listed like, hey, these are practical ways you could, but it sounds like you are already obviously ahead of the game.
I don't
and
have a whole workshop. It, but I do share about it directly with directors. Whenever I talk to a director, it's one of my go-tos. And I'm also looking at their signage. And we're also working on a plan for signage that faces a Planned Parenthood parking lot. And that's a new concept.
Nice.
And it has the same principles being applied. And it's also a collaborative joint effort concept, but that one's newer, and that one we're working on trying to build out, but I think it's going to take off.
Yeah. I think that's great. And I'm curious. So I get what you're saying about like how you practically do it in terms of you have the data, but building it into a busy schedule. Like, I don't know if it's best to have a meeting every month, or how do you build that into something that you were, if you already feel like you're at capacity, but this could be a really good payoff.
Yeah, it does take about an hour a month to evaluate and do this kind of work. It does take that, and it's focused work on this exact piece. But the benefit would be confidence in what needs to be amplified and what needs
to be
pruned.
Yeah. you're gonna see me sneaking into the back of your workshop when you're talking in March.
Yeah.
No. Like, what you got?
Well, and we've seen. So part of it is just knowing what's working, because like when we do things, you know, our gut might say it works, but actually looking at the how'd you hear about us is the ultimate number. You know, that's the ultimate conversion number to look at.
That's why I'm so passionate about the other data too, which is where it's like, if you don't know what you've been seeing, how can you tell if it's successful? Which is funny, because that's kind of part of what I have a workshop that I'm going to be doing at Heartbeat as well. Which, I mean, man, can you imagine if I didn't get the workshop, how awkward it would be around the office every time I pass that person? I'd be like, Kathy, you told me no. I'm just kidding. Everybody deserves an equal shot. And if it's not good enough, it's fine.
Yeah.
But mine's going to, oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, mine's gonna be kind of all about that, is just like making sure you have this, you know, a strategic marketing plan that goes into it. And some of that is like knowing where you're wanting to go and who you are and what you're, it just like, it kind of encapsulates all of that stuff so that you can do as much good in your community as possible, reach and rescue as many lives as possible.
Yeah. Cause like impressions lead to clicks lead to conversions lead to clients coming in, and
But like one of the things, okay, When you're looking at someone, you're doing Google Ads or something for them, and you are seeing the conversions, and you're like, my goodness, that's a beautiful number. And if you're talking to a center and they're like, we're not seeing people, what is your like immediate thought on, okay, well, what is going on here? Because typically my brain is like, what's the experience like? What's happening after they click schedule an appointment or whatever?
Yeah, the Google Ads will drive traffic to a website or to a phone number or to a landing page. Mm-hmm. And so that the next step is for that landing page, website, or phone conversation to convert.
Yeah.
And so there might be an issue. So if we have a lot of traffic going into a website and then the website doesn't continue with a high percent, a good percent of clients actually coming in, and that means that that might be the hang up is that website, if it's getting lots of good, or we're sending the wrong kind of traffic. That's another option that could be taking place if we're sending traffic with the wrong intent, it ends up falling off.
This is why I like took an hour of your time at CareNet, because I just think it's so fun and easy to talk with you, Jacob. I just want to throw things at you and get your perspective on things. And you're always like so game to answer the questions.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else there's something I wanted to say and now I forgot. What was it? Well, it'll come back. Oh boy.
I know. I threw you off. I told you at the beginning though, when you were like, whatever the initial question, and I said, that's given me confidence to ask whatever question I wanted. I didn't mean for it to be a warning, but really that was a warning, Jacob, of how this was going to go.
No, that's good. It's just such an important work. And I think, sometimes I feel like there's this like level of anxiety that comes, like if we don't get it right, you know, we're responsible for someone not reaching that clinic. And I think ultimately I think it's in God's hands and our goal, what we can do is do our best, or we can do well. And usually that's our best. And strive to do well, do our best, and let God have the results. And so like, you know, if we can let God have the victories, we can let God have the defeats, and that's fair.
I agree.
As long as we're following his direction and leading and asking for his direction and then taking that and then trying to follow it and push it through. I feel like that's what we're called to do.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I agree with you earlier. It felt like a very holy response for how I avoid burnout, but when I'm doing it right. You know what's interesting though is I feel like you hit different levels of responsibility, and then you get to this new, like before something that would have taken you out, it doesn't take you out as much. Like I noticed this first when I was in college and freshman year, I had so much time to blow. Like I just was just so much time. I didn't realize this. I was taking like 18 credits, but I was also going to Walmart at 2 a.m. with friends, because that's what we had to do for fun in my town at that time. And I remember each year of college, and I was a super senior, so I stayed around for 5 years. Each year of college, I was just like, why did I think that I had no time the year before? This year I have no time. And I've noticed that too with my jobs. I'm thinking like the first year I was at New Hope, how much more could I have gotten accomplished, because like working as I do now and what I know now. But I think God's so good to shoulder that. And so sometimes I haven't noticed quite how significant the increase is, or when I have noticed it, just knowing that like, he's got it. Cause like, I'm going to look back 2 years from now, and unless I've just made really poor decisions and I was like, man, I was working way too much at that time, I'm still going to be like, man, I'm doing so much more. I'm involved in so much more. Maybe it's personal, maybe it's professional, maybe it's both, than I was before. And it's cool sometimes how he just kind of, like as you're climbing that mountain, you kind of get stronger under his guidance.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes we get really busy with busy work and it feels like we have no time. And then if we can somehow just like cut through some of that clutter, we can not only get time back, we get clarity back. And so I remember what I was going to say before.
Oh,
and
sure.
So with Google and AI, I feel like AI is where people are getting answers to questions and they're avoiding Google because Google takes a bit more work. And then there's a shift between Google and AI. And Google may still have the most traffic, but there's definitely a shift taking place. And when I say AI, I mean like ChatGPT, Grok, and Gemini.
Sure.
And
whatever else has popped up that day.
Well, that's true. There's a lot of others as well, but those are the three largest. Well, three large. Maybe I don't know what they're largest. But, I feel like there's like a need to go back in marketing to what's less sandy or more firm. And so like word of mouth used to be number one. Back before 2011, it was always number one. And since 2015, it's no longer number one in markets that are like 50,000 people plus. In smaller markets, it's still number one, but it's only in smaller communities that have under 50,000 people in their county. But I feel like going back to word of mouth across the board, word of mouth marketing is something that is desirable, in my opinion. And that means like more church marketing, more community events, going to a community event where you get to tell positive stories about the pregnancy clinic to 200 plus people over 2.5 days.
Yeah.
County fairs, book fairs, any kind of like, you know, school events, just different community events. I think those are things that need to be continued and amplified and look for new opportunities to do more, you know, places where you can have a booth at a community event. I think that is something that can be grown. And then that's going to impact word of mouth. That will impact word of mouth. And then another one that's almost as good is signage. I feel like a lot of pregnancy clinics need to reevaluate their signage.
Yeah.
Not like their logo sign, but like their slogan banner or their banner that says something that would be attractive to draw someone in. And then to do more signage at the high school sports fence, at the college or university, more outdoor signage, more. I think signage is, it may be number five on the how'd you hear about us list, but it's been very steady. And I think it needs to be amplified. And with AI and Google being changing, I think we need to go back to the ones that are less volatile. And I'm also trying to work on some plans to navigate AI and how they're summarizing clinics based on. So like when a pregnancy clinic has the statement of we don't provide or refer for abortions or abortifacients, that's showing up in the AI summaries when someone's searching for abortion help in their area. The pregnancy clinic is getting hit with that disclaimer text. And so that's something that we're doing some testing on, trying to navigate options around that right now. But that's something we don't have an answer for yet, but we're working on some tests or theories on how to work with that scenario. Because I think that's showing up to cause harm to pregnancy clinics is that disclaimer, because it's saying what we don't do and it's getting used against us in these AI search results.
Yeah. I think all that's good. The first part that you were talking about in terms of like the word of mouth, and finding ways to boost that, like by being at an event or something, I think goes very much in line with what we're seeing people wanting to see others be authentic and genuine. Like, you know, we've in the past, like I'd say 5 years ago, people would be like, this is my authentic self. And it was just a blank card to do whatever they wanted. But when I'm talking about authenticity here, I mean, people being genuine in their interactions with one another. And so I think that is going a long way, both in maybe what you're putting out like on social media or something, how you're messaging yourselves, and then also how you're interacting with people. And what does it look like to maybe, yes, go to events and stuff. What does it look like to also have some of that like authentic interactions that are like an element of delight or something? I don't know what that would look like, but having kind of like a love your community where you find ways to express your appreciation for, I don't know, the people you're trying to reach. This is just a random idea that I'm thinking of. I have not built it out at all, but
I like that direction though. That sounds really,
Like how can you,
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. how can you spark those moments of, like, yes, you've planned them out a little bit, but how can you spark some like genuine, sincere moments that are even outside of stuff like the events that you'd be going to? How can you create those moments? I think that would be really cool to explore as people kind of get back to that authentic, in a healthy way, appreciation.
Yeah. Maybe there's an opportunity to have like some kind of club at a high school or some kind of group at a college. That's something worth pursuing, trying to come up with like a list of the traits and then figuring out what activities might match those traits. I think that would be worth exploring.
I also, I just caught sight of what I'm assuming is my picture for this call. And it is like, I look like I'm laughing and in the middle of a sneeze. It's like a scream grab on the side. It's totally derailed me. I just caught sight of it for the first time.
I see it on the side, like, the thumbnail.
Yeah, that's going to be a great picture.
That's the thumbnail. It won't show up in the podcast.
Okay, great. Like, that's nice. You know, you try to wear a nice shirt, you try to get everything in order, and then a screen grab gets you. The second thing you were talking about, Jacob, that I've totally messed my response up on, the signage. I also thought it was great that you were talking about, one, you were making some good points about signage, but also it amuses me because I'm like, I look like an idiot. Jacob has his sign right behind his head the entire time. I just thought it was funny that even on that level, like, you're saying good things about marketing with signages, but then I was like, and he also like lives it. Like, he doesn't just talk about it. Like, he believes it. There's a sign on his wall behind him.
Yeah. Well, I've got all these Amazon boxes that you can't even see right out of view right now.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've got my luggage for my work in here, and I've got my pile of things I need to return to Amazon that my wife bought that I need to return. So, you know, I put those out like outside that. Of the camera view.
Oh, no. When I'm working, I'll like scribble on post-it notes. And then because it just makes me feel better in the moment, like, I'll chuck them over my shoulder. And then I have to do this like big trash haul. And I looked back right before we started this and I wasn't sure it was going to be in camera. And I was like kicking those out of frame. So I was like, I can't just have these little colorful post-it notes.
Totally normal.
I wanted to build off of what you were saying, but that screen grab totally got me. And I wanted to say actually something really good about the signage, but it's gone and I don't think it's coming back.
I guess something I want to share. So
yeah, go
I would
it.
Love it if pregnancy clinic directors would, so when they put up billboards. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say if someone has a, two different billboards in their community, on that how'd you hear about us list, it would be really good to have each one listed. So like billboard by the highway, billboard by the Walmart, letting someone pick which billboard they saw. So if you have two billboards outside, mm-hmm. or hopefully you'll have, you know, the signage by the baseball field at that high school, and you'll have the signage by that college, and you'll have the signage by the Walmart. Essentially listing out each one on the how'd you hear about us list so someone can actually pick out the desired one or the one that they saw. And then you can learn which one's actually producing clients and then that are referring to that's how I heard about you.
Yeah.
And then that way you can stop using the one that doesn't get traffic and maybe amplify or change or improve or A/B test the one that is getting some traffic.
Yeah.
And
I like that. And also, if there is a director listening to this podcast, it's like, the time. All I'm saying is, at one point, I was at a center whose the director had so many tasks, and I had a propensity or proclivity, whatever word you need to use there, to ask questions. And so maybe look at your team. Do you have someone who asks questions that are not, I don't mean this in like the people who ask questions and you're like, you're being insubordinate, but the people who ask questions when you're like, I want to move to the next thing, maybe grab that person and start getting them to ask questions about, like, you know, point them in a specific direction. And it might be a way to look at this, like, if they're asking the questions anyway, and they're good questions, then put them on the billboards or the stuff like that. Like, look at how you're doing things and how could you possibly do them better? Like, let them unleash. Does that make sense what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah. Letting someone, explore, you know, options. And then if you weigh those options, then you can figure out which one might be the best, you know, the next one to try next.
Yeah, because I mean, you've had a lot of great ideas, and I'm just like, some of them is just taking the time to ask the questions. And if you don't feel like you have that time, but you have somebody on your team who maybe could ask those questions, it could be a starting point. Like, and then you could have further conversation with them, but they could like bring those questions to you.
Yeah. One of the questions that I've been asking lately that I wish I would have started years and years ago on was, mm-hmm. I talk to a Princeton Clinic director, I'll ask, what is your greatest need? And then my follow-up question might be, what is your greatest marketing need? But usually I don't even get to that one because they're usually their greatest need is tied to marketing. And usually I would say the answer has been most common is to reach more abortion, vulnerable, abortion-minded clients.
Yeah.
But identifying that as the greatest need is really helpful because then if we come up with ideas that point to that outcome, then it aligns with something that's worthwhile to pursue versus just making the assumption that that's what they would want. Because some groups have different greatest needs, like more volunteers or more funding. But the most common answer has been more AVAM clients. But asking questions is really helpful for just like building up direction for what needs to be done next.
Yeah.
I
love that you're hearing so many centers express a desire to reach abortion-minded, abortion-vulnerable. That's typically what I hear, but occasionally it might be, oh, like we don't have that problem around us. And I'm like, if you've got a mailbox and somebody can get an abortion, then you have this problem. If they have a way to get it from people from like other states or whatever, then you still have this problem. So I'm glad that that's consistently what you're.
Yeah. And most Princeton Clinic directors get it, but for the few that may not see it, like I've heard that a few times where they said, we're in a different area or it's not that.
Yeah,
the abortion pill can be shipped from India. It'll have a return address that looks local to your county. It will show up in someone's mailbox. They'll get it. They'll bring it into their house or dorm, and it's completely invisible to. There's no sidewalk counseling. There's no tallies being made. Some people guess it's 60 to 80%. I've heard 64% said a lot. But we don't really know because India is not reporting. It can be shipped without a prescription. It can be shipped in bulk for distribution. It's a wide range of scenarios right now.
Yeah. I don't mean it's changed what's going on. Now we're both blurry, Jacob. Our cameras are not behaving, but it's added a completely like different element. You've got to, I think it's important to be like aggressively strategic and looking at what is at your disposal. What can you work on now? Because I don't think everybody has to start doing everything today. One of the things I talk to customers about is, you know, what does it look like to build up? Like right now, if your budget doesn't allow for this, I know we're going to see some success here. So let's start here. And then let's have this conversation again later, but just being intentional about the strategy and stuff, because you're right. Like it's crazy what's happening, especially just with what you just mentioned about India, the pills and everything.
Yeah. I think when it comes to the budget, so what's one question I used to ask that one regularly, what percent of your budget is spent for marketing? And CareNet put out a number that a small clinic should have a budget of 10% of end revenue from marketing, and a large Princeton clinic should be close to 20%.
Yeah.
But when I talked to Princeton clinics, it usually ranged anywhere from 0.5% up to 4%. That was the most common range, was like less than 1 to 4. And then I think I spoke to one clinic that was spending 10%, but very often it was below 4.
Yeah.
And most people will probably hear this podcast and they won't get to see our blurry video.
But that makes me feel better because I'm like, man, Jacob's so nice. He has me on his podcast. I can't do anything about my camera, but I'm trying. And I'm like, I don't want this to mess up any kind of like, I don't know, like people see this blurry video and then judge it. And it's not your fault, Jacob. My camera's fault.
I, I've done podcasts where we don't even, someone didn't even have a camera, or where Alveda King was in the back of a car and it was bouncing around.
So also, I'm impressed by who you have on this, who you have on the podcast. I was like, man, Jacob just must, like, do you, to get the wide variety of people from a bunch of different backgrounds and experience and levels of popularity and stuff, like, do you just always ask, like, what's your tactic here? Or is there a sort of type of person you ask?
Yeah, I think most people say yes. President Trump didn't say yes. He, I asked his, my contact there, and it came back as he wasn't available. But other than that, I've had a pretty much yes across the board.
There's still time.
I did say no to two people.
Actually,
I did have one person say no, but it would have been controversial. It wasn't going to be a friendly podcast. But I will,
so and it's then, probably for the best.
It was
it could have been an interesting one.
I ended up saying no on because it was also going to be controversial, and it would have been hard. It was tied to the abolitionist group, and I, in the end, I decided just not to amplify the message more so than have a controversial podcast on here, because that's not really. We're mostly built to be friendly, encouraging, amplifying God's voice. But there's some that I wouldn't want to amplify their voice. I think they're attacking pregnancy clinics, and that's not something I want to amplify.
I liked the one I was just listening to, the I'm gonna mess it up. I want to say it was not sexual health, but was her name Lisa or I'm messing this up.
There's a lot of episodes.
Lori. That's right. Lori. She was talking about Lori Q Kindle.
Okay.
Q Kindle. She was talking about how you start having the conversation before people ever are in need of like a going to a maternity home or a pregnancy center, you know, or an adoption agency or something. You're having that conversation beforehand.
Upstream. Trying to reach them.
Yes. There we go.
I think the group might have even been called upstream. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My bad. I should not have brought it up unless I knew the title.
No,
everything.
No, that's fine.
But I was listening to that, and I it was encouraging and it was interesting. And so it makes sense that that's how you're kind of determining who's going to be on the podcast.
Yeah. So I've tried to have a lot of different parts of the pro-life movement, you know, like legal, religious, practical counseling. For a while we did a pastor and a priest combo.
Yeah.
and then we've had just a wide range. And then we've also been doing a lot of the maternity home and adoption, trying to do like the complementary edges of the pro-life space. We did one on frozen embryos, you know, adoption from IVF. We've done one on just a lot of different topics.
You had a lady, I mean, I'm sure there's multiple people, but somebody I met at the CareNet conference, she's a pro-life children's author, where she has, I actually have her book.
Out of Alaska, I think.
Yeah, out of Alaska. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she wrote a book about, for like 3 to 8-year-olds about, essentially to help them understand what an ultrasound is through storytelling, you know, grandma style.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's probably going to end up being more ultrasound doctors who will say, you know, I got interested in ultrasounds when I read this. You know, my mom would read this book 10 times in a month.
That's
and
sweet.
I'm imagining that's going to happen. Because with books like that, like that's where people start, is when they're 3 to 5 years old, they get an interest in something and then they continue in that interest. So having content for those 3 to 5-year-olds is really important for having more people show interest in that area. I would assume.
That's true. And I feel even more convicted now to get that book in the mail to my godson so that he knows what's going on with mommy. And maybe he'll become an ultrasound tech or doctor.
He might have more awareness. It's not like it's
yeah.
And if they can understand it, why not let them understand it? What an ultrasound is.
Yeah.
It seems like it seems very reasonable and and it blesses the future of the ultrasound world, of the ultrasound kind of work.
And it helps the kids celebrate maybe a little bit more what's going on with mom when they kind of see like, oh, this is what, like, this is what's happening. This is what it means.
Yeah. And it's surprising what kids can understand. And if it's put into a language that they can understand and it's reachable, then
yeah.
And it's cool and good. Then yeah, it seems like that passes the test of, yeah, let's do it.
Jacob, you were, I remember one of the things I was going to say, it's still not like the marketing thing, but when you were talking about just like being competitive, even like on your own team and stuff, which I think is good and like, especially done healthy, like can really help advance. But it made me think, I was like, my gosh, Jacob must just be terrifying on the pickleball court. Like if you're talking about competition within teams, I was like, what, now that you feel comfortable, like what does that look like? Just like going hard at it.
We play indoors and it's mm-hmm. an older crowd, like between late 30s to early 80s. It's an older crowd and they're really good. Like,
they are.
I played yesterday against this lady, Lauren, who is this smaller woman, and she is a force to be reckoned with. She hits the ball so hard and accurately. I mean, I was lucky to win one out of two games, but I lost the other game. And then this lady, Judy, I was playing with this lady, Judy, on my team. And she was, I think she said she was, I want to say 71, 65. Yeah. I don't remember now, I guess. But anyway, she did great. I mean, but it's definitely the kind of sport that someone can play into the later years of life.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's so fun. And be really good at it too, still, and play competitively. I did hit the ball really hard at this one lady, and I felt bad because I did speed it up on purpose. Because when I wasn't speeding it up, she kept returning it, and then I hit her hand, and I think it might have bruised her hand a little bit. But I told her I was sorry, and I definitely played softer after that hit. But I really did hit it hard.
You didn't yell. That's what you get.
No. She said, okay, guys.
Everybody listening to this podcast, if you are inspired to pick up pickleball, you've got to send selfies to Jacob of you taking up this new hobby. Tell him you're in it with him.
Yeah, it's so much fun. And then I was watching my wife play with her friend Tammy, and they were just they were killing it. Like she was getting these returns just barely over the net. And
so
then her
nice.
Friend Tammy was jumping up and like hitting it really hard down. And boy, they were, it's a lot of fun. It's just it's sort of like, it's a unique sport where you can show up at a place where there's a lot of pickleball mm-hmm. players and just shuffle in to the play. And you'll play with different people every game or regularly when you're there playing. And it's just, at this one park, there's a lot of people that show up during certain times mm-hmm. and it's really easy to play with people you'd never played with before and end up just,
It's a
really interesting way of play. The community is the interesting part.
It kind of reminds me of like pickup basketball, but nicer. And then
pickleball,
like if you've ever been playing ping pong and you're like, man, I wish I could hit this ball harder. Or you've ever been playing tennis and you thought, man, I'm tired of running. Then pickleball is the sport for you.
Yeah. And people that have played tennis or ping pong or racquetball usually pick it up really quick. Or if they're young, they'll just pick it up pretty quick. I've even seen some golfers and baseball players seem to pick it up quick, but usually it's ping pong and tennis.
Yeah.
Those translate very, very closely. So ping pong, I think people are better at the kitchen line with doing really quick responses to, you know, to speed up or to the thinking. And then people that have that tennis background usually have really good long shots from the deep part of the court.
Back court is where I want to be. If I get near the kitchen, like the closer I get, the warmer I get. And that's because I'm having a full blown just panic from the top of my head to the tips of my toes. I'm like, it's just too much. Like take me to the back and I'll just hit them. I do this one move that looks great when I do it. It's probably not recommended by anybody with experience, and it looks stupid if I mess it up. But like in a moment, like where I'm reaching, I'll throw my paddle from my right hand to my left hand and hit it. Oh. When it goes over, it looks so cool, Jacob. And when it doesn't, it looks like, why did that? Why'd she do that? That was a horrible, like, why'd she make that mistake?
Wow. You can switch hands. That's cool.
I think it's poor impulse control is really what's happening when I toss my paddle from one hand to the other.
So have you ever heard of the phrase ATP?
Nope.
So ATP means around the post. If the ball's like on your side of the court, and you can actually hit it below the net, but as long as you go around the post and into the other person's court, it's still good. That's an ATP.
Wow. What a curve you have to put on that thing.
Or when you're near the kitchen, have you ever seen someone jump outside of the kitchen? So they jump over the edge. Uh-huh. So you can't step into the kitchen, hit in the air, but you can jump from the kitchen line to out of bounds. And once I was playing in California, and I saw someone jump over the kitchen, over the net. I don't know if that's legal. No. I never looked it up. No one else has ever done that before. But that's what they did. During the game.
How young were their knees that they did that
jump? 22. They were.
There you go. Yeah, that makes sense.
And the guy was like 6'5" and just really athletic. I can't. Yeah, he was just really athletic.
There's no way. There's no way that's legal.
You can jump out of bounds. Other person's court might be.
But you're not in my court. If you jump in my house, that point's mine, not yours. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's one of those rules you don't even have to look up because most people aren't tempted by that idea.
Talk about intimidation. Like if someone's like, I lead with some intimidation, they're the person that's jumping over the net getting that point. That's funny.
Yeah. It's I just like the dinking where you try and just get it barely over the net or you speed it up. And then have you ever heard of the nasty Nelson? You ever heard of that phrase?
No.
So that's when you're serving and instead of serving into the appropriate court, you try and hit the other player that's closer. You know.
Oh.
And if you hit them, it's your point, and that's a nasty Nelson.
Okay. I'm so glad you told me about that because I have two brothers that I play pickleball with and I'm really looking forward to this. But I do sometimes get so annoyed. Like if I'm playing with my dad or my younger brother, they're so much taller than me and their net game or kitchen game or whatever, so much better. Sometimes I get really irritated and I just pelt it straight at their chest. What is that called?
Well, that's fine. They pelt it right at their chest. So there's a move called the punch move where you put your paddle straight and you just push it straight forward.
Uh-huh.
It's called a punch shot. So you don't actually swing. You literally just put your paddle. So it's like, you know, it's right there in front of you and you just punch it straight forward. So if someone shoots, you know, the ball right at your chest, punch shot it back. And you have a lot of control over where it goes when you punch shot it.
That's what I do in ping pong. So I just need to bring it to the pickleball court.
You have a punch shot in ping pong? That's cool.
It's called I call it a panic hit, but I've done that before where I just immediately.
You literally just like push straight forward. You're not swinging. Yeah. You're not trying to put English on it.
It's just,
but it allows you to cover that really. Otherwise, it's hard to swing when your arms are trying to swing right in front. I mean, sometimes you can, but another option is to just, punch shot. So here's some trivia for you. You know why the first server starts in the northwest corner of the court?
No.
So the game started in Washington, which is the northwest of the country. That's why it always starts in the northwest corner. That's the side that starts to serve based on where it started. My favorite serve, I only do it once in a while because people think I'm making fun of them when I do it, or some of my friends do, is I stand backwards at the serve line and then I bounce it and I do a back hit. And I usually get about 80% in. And then, but it's definitely a morale booster because whenever I do that, my team will ultimately, you know, we get excited.
Rally?
We rally. Yeah. Okay.
Do you guys have like an iRapture pickleball team at this point? I mean, I know you and Heather go out, but
I mean, not technically, but Heather and I play a lot and we're both employed by Rapture. The rest of the team, I don't think anyone else is currently playing. I mean, that would be cool if they did, but we did play against another marketing group. We met at one of the conferences and we were playing a lot.
Who'd you play?
I'm trying to remember the name of the group. It was, I have to look it up. But we played, like they had three or four people on their team playing and we met. We've done it twice now at the conference.
Okay.
We also played some of the Hope Sync or the Heritage House group. But they weren't as competitive. They think they are, but they don't have as many competitive people in Snowflake.
How can EWS get in on this? How can Extend get in on this action? Because we don't
bring your pickleball paddle to the well. You can.
I mean, we play.
So if you start off with a YouTube video, the way to balance it is you have one newbie player or new player along with, you know, a seasoned player. In the other team, you do the same thing, you know, a new and a seasoned, and it just balances out. And it'll like people that are seasoned can help you learn the game, help you bring you up, and then increase the intensity as appropriate.
Okay. My team, as long as everything goes well, I'm hoping to bring them all in for the Heartbeat Conference at the end of March. And I'm going to tell them there's a good chance we might be able to play people in pickleball. And they're all competitive. They may not know what they're doing. I'll teach them. We'll talk about it ahead of time. But that would be so fun.
If people bring their pickleball paddles and we just work to find the nearest court to the hotel... Yeah. That's all we normally do. It might just be a short walk or it might be a short Uber, but either way, it's the closest courts.
I think that would be really fun.
It was actually at a conference. I was playing by myself at the San Bernardino conference when I saw that guy jump over the kitchen and the net.
Yeah.
I was at one of the last Sister Paula ILS conferences that year and I had just started playing like 3 weeks earlier. So I was just starting to get my pickleball addiction started. I was only 3 weeks into it at that point, I think. But
you mean you didn't try jumping over the net at that point?
I still haven't tried that, but I'm still curious if it's allowed or not. I don't quite know. So if you're one of the rules about the kitchen is that you can't run into the kitchen if you hit the ball in the air. Like you can't be in the kitchen or your momentum can't take you into the kitchen. But I've heard that the rules say that you can pull your team member back by their ponytail to help them stay out of the kitchen.
No. If somebody pulls on my ponytail, I'm not going to be friendly after that. There's going to be some friendly fire.
I don't know if anyone that's ever actually used that rule, but that's what the rules say. You can pull your team member back from the kitchen if the momentum is about ready to take them in. So you can like help them stay out. But I don't see anyone ever playing that level of competitively.
You know, I have seen in female soccer, I've seen some girls get yanked down by their ponytail. So people who've maybe had a soccer background could possibly be really good at pulling.
If you can help your team member stay out. Yeah,
exactly.
So my wife, we play on Mondays before volleyball from like 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then we play on Thursdays from 8 to 10. And then we're playing today from noon to 4. Nice. And it's a lot of fun. And then I used to play a lot with some guys from my church after church on Sundays, Sunday evenings. We haven't done that lately, but. Boy, it's the kind of sport though that I feel like my knees are stronger. I think I probably have lost some weight. I definitely feel like my energy levels are higher.
Well, you definitely need your knees stronger if you're going to be taking up a half marathon. You need something when building it up.
When I first started playing pickleball, my knees were terrible. I had to put one knee brace was like a must, and the other one was just for like confidence. But it took me like after playing for 6 months or so, I didn't need the knee braces anymore. Nice. But my knees were bad. I was sitting at a desk doing marketing work so much that, you know, my health started falling apart. And
Yeah, I was talking to a friend who she's a physical therapist, doctor, There's a better name for it, but that's what she has. And I was like, man, my knee should not hurt this bad in my mid 30s. I mean, I did a lot. I played rugby throughout college, and after I played all kinds of sports in high school. And I also fell down the stairs many, many times my last 2 years of high school. I just, it was carpeted and I was daydreaming and so like all the time. So my knees have been through a lot, but I still feel like they hurt worse now than they should at this point. So I, pickleball, that's what I'm hearing as my, as an answer.
Yeah. Yeah. And just go do it. It'll, have you played much yet? Or it sounds like you've played some, or maybe not.
I play pickleball about three times a year, because that's typically when my entire family gets together, and that's what we're, that's one of the things we do. But I'd like to play it more. I just, you know, need to actually look for a community group or something.
Yeah, if you can find a, you don't want empty courts. You want courts that are, that have, what's ideal is that there's a way to sign up to play in the next game with people you don't know. Like that's okay, the ideal that's scenario. So like at one of the outdoor courts, there's a paddle system. So people can put up four paddles in a row. Mm-hmm. And every time there's four, you just put your paddle into the next group.
Yeah.
And or indoor, there's a whiteboard and people put up their names. Once there's four names, you know, that's full. And then if essentially there's a system for like when there's a court open, the next four go on. You want to find a place in your community that has that. Because if you have that, you can show up as a single, a duo, a trio, or all four people. But you don't have to have all four. You can just show up with something less and then mix in with people that are there. And then you'll play with a variety of people. And it's, and you, as long as you balance the teams out where the teams are roughly, you know, not way out of skew. And if you have two good players, just split them up.
Yeah.
Then it's really fun. It's really fun.
That's good to know.
I think the community part is an absolute must because you don't want to have just a bunch of empty courts and then just go play with, you know, the same group of four all the time. That's not as interesting. I think the community part is really good to find a group that's where it's busy and there's a little bit of a weight and you have to, and the way to mix in.
Yeah. I know we've got some good racquetball, not racquetball, pickleball courts. I just don't know which ones have that set up, but I'm sure they exist. Cause
yeah, you might have to look at some reviews or just to go visit them. Where I'm at, it's usually really busy in the mornings and then sometimes at sunset or during certain hours. If you can find out like when it's busy, that's usually the time to go and then find a way to mix in. Once you get past, like, you know, once you sort of get the basics down at least, or for someone, for someone gets the basics.
Are you in the mountain time zone?
So we're in Arizona. So we match mountain half and Pacific half. We never change.
Okay. I was just looking at the time and I was like, is Jacob about to, but then I remembered that would be, that'd be simple. And then I was like, maybe he's in mountain. So I see. So you're close. You're close to like mountain and Pacific. Like it's.
Yeah. Well, so we don't, our time zone doesn't, we run off of Arizona. Oh. Matches Pacific half the year, and then we matches mountain other half.
Okay.
Yeah, the podcast has been going. I guess we're hitting like an hour and a half. So, this is good.
I was we were talking. I was like, I bet Jacob just cut some of this. Like maybe that's what's happening here. As I pulled you
on that long drive, and they just want to hear some good banter.
Just want to talk hear about pickleball for 25 minutes.
Everything from marketing to pickleball and. And beyond.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a good time.
Awesome. Well, Delaney, I'm glad you've been on here. As we wrap things up, what are your final thoughts as we wrap things up? Maybe pulling back to the marketing and extend conversation and what are your final thoughts before we close in prayer?
Let's see. Tell me this first, Jacob. What's the one thing you want to take your listeners to take away from any podcast episode you do?
So hearing God's fingerprints in the stories of the person on, hearing encouragement, and then hearing about something new that they may not have adopted yet.
Okay.
And I think we got the finger. I think we got the new part with A/B testing and the word of mouth.
Your contribution. You're like, fine. Okay, Delaney's not going to bring me something new. I'm going to make this happen.
and then hearing how God's brought you into this position and using your skills, even though you, whether you see it or sometimes you don't even see God's fingerprints until you go back and look later. That was good. Reflect on that.
Kind of going off of that, something that this kind of goes in hand with what we've been talking about, but going back to that celebration portion and then just also recognizing that it's not all on your shoulders. It feels like it is, whether you are the ED or the CEO or the director of advancement or the client services director, whatever role you have at any point in an, or, in a maternity home, adoption agency, pregnancy center, it can feel like it's all weighing on you, whatever your role is. And so just taking a moment to recognize that it's actually resting easy in His hands. And you might have those seasons of struggle where it does hurt a little bit more, but it's still resting easy in His hands. And what you get to do is look to Him. So when people are looking to you for answers, you still get to look to Him for that, where it's like, hey, did you hear that? We need an answer for this. But one of the things that I found really encouraging is just looking back over the year. And so sometimes people will do that by like grabbing a big sheet of paper, like we used to do this at New Hope, and we will just write down like all the successes from the year. But it doesn't have to just be like looking at the year and the successes. I think it's really cool to take some time, and you could even have a day, like maybe your next staff retreat or something, talk about God's fingerprints in your life. Like take a page out of Jacob's book and, you know, everybody take like 30 minutes to an hour or something, kind of really just reflect on what did it look like God's involvement in my life? What does it look like? What have I seen God doing at this organization? And then come back together and share. I think that could be really powerful, especially if you're in a season that's a little difficult, to prepare you for what's coming next, to kind of remind you of what He has done and to encourage you for what He's going to do.
Yeah, that's good. And I think that's the part that, that's the new part, or the part that needs to be more adopted, is, you know, taking time to celebrate and reflecting and writing down, noting, paying attention to the wins, the small wins, the big wins, the wins over time, but including those small, fingerprint level wins.
When I see you at a conference, Jake, I'm going to be asking how your team celebrates.
Yeah. When I play pickleball, I'm just very vocal. I usually just like yell celebratory words.
I genuinely, even though you are so kind, Jacob, I thought what you were about to say was, well, when we beat you in pickleball, I'll show you how we celebrate. That's how I thought what you're going to say.
I don't really care about like who wins the game overall. I really like just like a really good rally. Like even if I don't win the point.
That's fair.
I think I just like really enjoy, you know, having the ball go back and forth and people getting these really hard hits, or maybe they lobbed it or someone dinked it, or they had to like go from the left side of the court to the right and they had to fully stretch, or they had to hurry up because it was really far from where they were. Like, to me, I just feel like that's so much fun to see someone do well. And even if, you know, and usually both sides do well in those kind of rallies, but only one side gets the point. But I would celebrate it regardless of who gets the point, because it's just really fun to have that kind of like competitive high level play.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah. Cool. Well, so you think what's the...
That was my last thing.
Yeah, I think we covered the three pillars. And I think I think we're in good shape. So Delaney, would you... as we wrap up, would you close this out in prayer? And then those who are listening, join in and let's pray to God together.
Sure. Dear God, thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you for this conversation with Jacob. We were talking about burnout, and there's always a lot to do. And I told him earlier that one of the things that helps with warding off that anxiety and stress is laughter. And I have had so much fun laughing with him and talking with him, celebrating what you've done in my life, in his and Heather's lives, and what is happening at organizations all across this world. Lord, I pray for the people listening to this podcast I pray for the good work they're doing. If they feel isolated, God, I pray that you would open their eyes to not only the people around them that are running hard with them, but also the good work that you're doing. God, I pray that they would be encouraged. I pray that they would be equipped, that they'd be empowered. I pray that they would have the space to take a deep breath, to not make some reactive decision, but that they would be able to move forward with confidence and knowing that you've got them, you've got the organization, you've got the women that they are trying to reach, the men, the babies, that each day when if a new Goliath is popping up, that you're not surprised and you're not scared and that you've got their back. Lord, I pray that they would start to see miracles that are happening. The things that you have brought them through as individuals, families, their organization, as a team. I pray that they would remember those victories when new obstacles come about. God, I pray that this next year they would feel, I don't know, they just have a little bit more time to do things like A/B testing, like Jacob suggested. I pray that you would have, really cool stories come out of this time, that they would be encouraged and that they would share those with Jacob so that he'd be encouraged as well. I thank you for the work that Jacob's doing. I pray that you would empower his hands as well, that you would continue to bring that next podcast guest his way, that these directors and pregnancy help team members would be encouraged and they would be blessed. In your wonderful name, amen.
Amen.
To the warning that there are angels standing by my side. Platinum clouds open up, I see your face in the twilight. Peaceful glow in your cosmic me into the fire, climbing higher in my sin. Up at the top of my ladder, I just keep growing fatter. Go.